Gold, silver, oil, and U.S. shares all blasted higher this week on U.S. dollar weakness. Welcome to Gold Seek Radio, everyone. Your host, Chris Walczek, back with you. We've got another Muy Grande-sized episode. Wall Street and Main Street alike are popping the corks this weekend. The Dow Jones was up 1,500 points in just 3 weeks off the lows. Gold, silver, highest point in over a year. Even crude oil is on fire, well, figuratively, with our Alpha Stocks subscribers profiting handsomely, about 100% in just 5 days on the oil sector. So it's a pleasure to welcome back Bob Hoy, Senior Investment Strategist of Institutional Advisors. He knows a thing or two, you could say, about the markets. He's forgotten more than most of us will ever know. His new peak momentum indicator tends to identify market zeniths as well as bear markets. He says the gold and silver correction may be over, clearing the path for a new primary bull market. Plus, Canada has officially sold off 100% of its gold reserve stockpile. You can virtually make a fortune just taking the opposite side of central bank gold operations. For instance, I'm sure folks will remember how the Bank of London sold the bulk of its gold stockpile at the exact low, which seems to have coincided with the 12-year run in the yellow metal. So that's a big positive contrarian sign. Then James Turk of Gold Money returns to the show. He's, as usual, wildly bullish on gold and silver. He thinks the 80-to-1 gold to silver ratio could indicate silver has even more potential than gold. And were the gold to silver ratio to return to its naturally occurring 10-to-1 ratio, well, you'd see silver at 3 digits. Then Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest must-hear report. And if you haven't already signed up for our Alpha Stocks newsletter, now's the time to do it, folks. I mean, we have had a string of several remarkable candidates. As I mentioned last week, we saw our oil shares skyrocket using some leverage there. But still, it was a unique opportunity to increase some exposure in a diversified portfolio. And each week, a new portfolio, balanced appropriately, outperforms virtually every other competitor from George Soros to Warren Buffett. So we'd like to have you on board Alpha Stocks newsletter if you haven't already signed up. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. Visibility virtually unlimited over the New York COMEX exchange this week amid dollar weakness. By Friday's close, the yellow metal added $48 for the week, up 4%, finishing at $12.70. Silver ended at $14.69, up a dollar. That's about 7% in a week. The XAU Gold and Silver Equities Index just couldn't be contained, adding another 5 points, up to 66.75. Wasn't that market near 50 recently? That's another 8% on top of 30 to 40% this year alone. Then West Texas Intermediate Crude picked up another 10%, $3 finishing at $35.92 per barrel. Gold is higher by 16% this year. That's the best closing price in 12 months, thanks in large part to negative rates in Japan and the EU. Negative rates creates that perfect inflationary storm where metals tend to thrive. Bullish sentiment in gold, as reflected in the ETF demand, is red hot. Gold-backed ETFs have climbed 259 metric tons in their holdings so far this quarter. That represents the best advance in nearly 6 years on a quarterly basis, amid insatiable investment appetite for the metal. In related news, BlackRock, Inc., the well-known investment firm, halted its issuance of new gold ETFs, $7.7 billion of iShares, due to an unexpectedly huge demand for the shares. They were caught off guard as investors directed a massive number of funds at a record pace. They had failed to register with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission for new shares, probably anticipating a decline. They thought they'd get the best of investors. Well, instead, I don't really buy this implausible story. It looks like there'll be some discrepancies in price for a few days, but just, I think, one more solid reason to own those mining company shares and bullion exclusively as we see more cracks in the ETF model on a regular basis. And speaking of gold shares, we now have BRI, Brazil Resources, and that's BRI.V. You can hear the promo in this week's show. The chief investment strategist at BlackRock issued a recommendation that investors should consider buying gold on expectation of more volatility in the market this year. I think I'll leave that without further comment. Precious metals, bottom line. Precious metals activity was impressive this week. In bull markets, it's typical to see surprises on the upside. The market was poised to collapse this week, as it had dropped for 2 weeks, but instead it caught the shorts off guard and the bulls stampeded higher. And it's possible that in an election year, and there's considerable geopolitical uncertainty that tends to surround election years, there's oftentimes sluggish activity in the stock market, and much of those funds are likely being directed to the precious metals. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, not a single cloud could be seen for miles over the New York Stock Exchange. For the third week running, investors added shares amid lowered Fed rate hike odds. The Dow finished at 16,639, up 366, 2.2%. The S&P 500 also added 52 points, ending at 1948, close to that 2000 mark, up about 2.5%, and the NASDAQ added 127, 2.7%, finishing at 47.17 for the week. Well, the bulls cheered on Friday amid a Labor Department report that showed that the average hourly earnings dropped for the first time in more than a year. Investors viewed the news as a positive because the economy gained 242,000 jobs last month and held the unemployment rate at 4.9%, the national unemployment rate at 4.9%. Bottom line on Wall Street. Well, market volatility as viewed in the CBOT, VIX, and VVIX all suggest better times ahead for the U.S. equities market next week, while the Fear Greed Index suggests the market is temporarily overbought. So I really can't suggest chasing shares higher. I would wait for a reaction, but things look much more solid. And coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio with both of our big guests. We'd like for you to stay with us right here. The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity. Brazil Resources, based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves. Industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Well, James Turk, founder of GoldMoney.com, author of The Coming Collapse of the Dollar, How to Profit from It. Welcome back.
Thanks, Chris.
Gold is still up by about 10% for the year. We've seen the HUI off of its lows by 60, 70%, the XAU 20 to 30%. It also seems like we might have found a floor in the precious metal sector.
Yeah, you're looking at it from dollar terms. In dollar terms, we finally have a floor, I expect. I mean, if you look at gold in terms of a variety of different currencies around the world, gold continues to rise month after month, week after week, and there was no correction on a number of different currencies. But in dollar terms, as we know, we basically had the correction, and now it looks like we're getting ready to move higher again. And, you know, there's every reason for that to happen. Fundamentally, gold is cheap.
The gold-to-silver ratio, a very interesting metric. It gives one an idea. Investor appetite from gold to silver, and you've kept your eye on this ratio for some time, and you've noted something of an anomaly recently.
Yeah, you know, for the last 20 years, the ratio has gone up to 80, or the low 80 area. In other words, 80 ounces of silver to purchase 1 ounce of gold. And that marked a turning point. And the ratio has fallen. It's fallen at different levels and different speeds. It fell back in 2011 all the way to 31 ounces of silver to 1 ounce of gold. And, you know, here we are again back up in the 80 level. So my expectation would be that silver is going to start outperforming gold going forward from here. So basically what that means, Chris, is that even though I'm bullish on gold, I'm even more bullish on silver.
We have seen silver certainly struggled relative to gold since 2011. One factor there was the unbelievable rise from $15 to $50, threefold increase over just a period of 7 to 8 months, almost unprecedented in the markets. You'd have to go back to maybe the NASDAQ circa 1999-2000 to find an index on its own. But I wanted to move on to the Federal Reserve. Our policymakers are backpedaling strongly on what looked like was a sure bet for a couple of rate hikes this year in 2016. Now the Fed Funds futures contracts are indicating virtually no chance, very low odds, of a rate hike over the next 12 months. Do you think this is an important factor, or have the markets already discounted this?
Well, I think it's probably one of the most important things that the markets are facing at the moment, because you have the central planning coming from the Federal Reserve, thinking that they know better than what the market does in terms of setting interest rates. And as a consequence, what's happening is we're basically destroying the capitalist system, where interest rates are the most important barometer in terms of, you know, interaction between people and the economy. The most immediate impact is that savers are being hurt badly by these interest rates that are near zero. And we really should have a more normal interest rate where savers are earning, you know, 3 or 4 or even 5% on the money they save. The fact that there's no incentive to save is, you know, destroying the incentive for saving. And as a consequence, if there's no incentive to save, where is the money that banks are going to be lending coming from? It's going to come from the printing press. So what's happening is it's one of the results of central planning, and it's going to blow up at some point in time. In other words, we're going to have a train wreck. Whether that train wreck is this year, next year, after that, nobody can predict. But the Fed is in between a rock and a hard place. They're afraid to raise interest rates because there's so much debt in the system. On the other hand, savers are being hurt badly. So they basically are just going to sit on their hands, at least until after the election.
Do you expect then for our Fed officials to follow in the footsteps on both sides of both ponds, of the BOJ and the European Union ministers, economic ministers, who have essentially moved at least one or two of their benchmark lending rates into negative?
It's different when you're talking about the world's reserve currency and moving to negative interest rates. Japan is not the world's reserve currency. The euro is not the world's reserve currency. The U.S. has that position, and it's unique. So if you're going to take the world's reserve currency to zero interest rates, you're going into uncharted territory. We've never been there before. But we are seeing some impact from what's happening in Europe and what's happening in Japan. There's no incentive for people to hold the Japanese yen or the euro. Switzerland's a good example. You've got negative interest rates there. What people are doing is they're trying to move into the 500 Swiss franc paper note to avoid having to pay the bank for keeping their money in a bank account. And now you have governments trying to, you know, get rid of the 500 Swiss franc note. There's talk in the UK about, you know, getting rid of the 50-pound note, and in the U.S., $100 bill. So what that means is people are going to look for alternative ways to hold their liquidity. And obviously, Chris, this is going to be very, very beneficial to the gold and silver price, because you can actually hold gold and silver now at rates cheaper than you would be holding the Swiss franc. You know, everybody says, well, you have a negative interest rate in gold or silver in the sense that you have to pay for storage. Well, the storage costs on gold are a lot less now than the negative interest rates people are paying in the Swiss franc and some other currencies around the world.
Can you make a case for 20-to-1 gold to silver ratio, or even the more traditional, let's say, the next few years?
Yeah, you know, in 2011, as I mentioned, we were at 31 ounces of silver to 1 ounce of gold. And the way I look at it is like this. Geologists tell me that there's about 10 times more silver than gold in the Earth's crust. So I think the natural ratio, one would think, would be 10 ounces of silver to 1 ounce of gold. So why are we at 80 instead of 10? Well, it's because silver has is demanded for different reasons than gold. Gold's demand is basically monetary. Silver is both a monetary demand as well as a industrial demand. That creates some volatility in silver relative to gold. So you have the ratio fluctuating. The historical ratio is normally about 15 or 16 ounces of silver to 1 ounce of gold. That's when under the gold standard, when silver was still used as subsidiary. So my expectation would be that you are going to go lower, and we'll probably, on this move, go lower than the 31 ounces of silver to 1 ounce of gold that we saw back in April of 2011. You know, how much lower it goes than that, I don't really know. But the point I'm making is that, given that we're at 80 now and we're going to be heading a lot lower, silver is going to outperform gold when you look at it in dollar terms.
One of the points you've made today will resonate with our listeners. Rates have been held low. I mean, you simply, as a retiree, as one dependent on passive income, it's really challenging today. I think anyone would agree to find interest or dividend or coupon that makes the risk worthwhile. And so it seems as though the system has been gamed. I know this has been talked about a lot on talk radio, but by authorities and policymakers, almost forces every professional and investor to try to squeeze out as much capital gain as possible from the market. And that eventually has to backfire because leverage gets deployed on a massive scale. Eventually, you know, it's just that Will Rogers saying, folks are going to be more concerned about the return of their capital than the return on their capital. Do you think that that's the wake-up moment when investors' passion for the precious metals returns?
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, there are two elements to this. One, of course, is the interest income that you'd be receiving on your money, or, you know, trying to get as much interest income as you can. But the other issue, which is just as important, is the safety aspect. You know, given the fact that governments around the world have passed legislation to allow for bail-ins, where depositors pay for a bank failure, there aren't a lot of safe places now to put your money. And that's why I think, again, this is a very positive backdrop for both gold and silver.
Do you like the CRB on a forward basis? It's been struggling now for so long, and crude oil has weighed heavily.
Yeah, you know, this is actually, I think, the critical thing that we have to be looking at going forward. You know, right now, the core inflation rate in the United States is at a 10-year high. It's been masked for a couple reasons. Basically, the cost of commodities has been going down, and you know, therefore, the inflation rate doesn't look as bad as it has been. But services, the price of services has been rising, and if commodities turn higher, which is what I expect is going to happen this year, commodity prices turn higher, you're going to see massive increases in the rate of inflation, and we're going to be well above the Federal Reserve's 2% target. And if we're well above the Federal Reserve's 2% target, what are they going to do then? Are they going to raise interest rates to fight inflation, or are they going to keep interest rates low to try to deal with the debt bubble that they've created? That's something that has to be watched as we go over the course of this year. I think commodity inflation is that's going to catch people off guard.
We certainly saw that in the shares this year. The mining sector is back on investors' radar screen, and of course the shorts are forced to cover at much higher prices. Do you see this theme persisting for the next year or two?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you know, these things are cyclical, and you know, markets go from extreme overvaluation to extreme undervaluation. And the extreme undervaluation we've seen in the mining shares over the past couple of years has been historic. You know, by all my measures, this has never happened before. So if gold and silver move higher from here, and I expect them to do that, one has to think that the mining shares are going to respond very, very positively. And in fact, that's why they've done so well this year. You know, we've seen, you know, good moves in both gold and silver, but the mining shares themselves, the percentage gains there have far exceeded the moves in both gold and silver, which is what's to be expected because gold and silver are money. They don't generate cash flow. You know, they're just sterile assets that preserve purchasing power over long periods of time, whereas the mining shares themselves are an investment. So because they're an investment, you have different levels of risks that you don't get with gold and silver, and consequently, you would expect to see this outperformance in the mining shares themselves. And that is what you've seen this year, outperformance by the mining shares.
Today, I wonder if you could give us an idea of any topicality that we may have missed, anything I haven't covered.
Yeah, I think the thing that we need to be watching, you know, I'm over here in London, England, where I live, and the British government is going to hold a referendum in June to enable the people to vote whether to stay in or stay out of the European Union. We can see the European ruffled at the edges because of the immigration issues and what's happening with the euro and a variety of other problems. And if the UK government referendum, if the people vote to leave the EU, I think that'll be another nail in the coffin of the EU. So I think there could be a lot of turmoil here in Europe over the course of the year. And that turmoil, not only political, will also have impact in the financial markets.
We don't hear much of that over here in the States. It's odd because I have family in London. We saw them in Florida. They didn't have much to say about that situation. Would it be a long-term benefit to the British Isles?
Well, this is my own personal opinion. I've looked at it a little bit and studied it, you know, from a financial point of view. And every year, the British government sends £12 billion to the EU. They get very little in return, in my view. All they get in return is regulations and rules, you know, created by bureaucrats living the life of luxury in Brussels. What we're seeing, you know, essentially worldwide is people want to control their own destiny. And as a consequence, I think, you know, Britain should vote to leave the European Union and just operate as a sovereign state, making its own rules, its own laws, and living in the world in a friendly basis with all countries, but not having to be part of a political union, which is what the EU has become. It's no longer just an economic free trade zone. It's being turned into a political union as well. So basically, I'm in favor of Britain leaving, but we shall see. You know, it's a long time before the election, which is June. We'll see how it develops.
Well, James Turk, I wonder if you'd like to tell folks just a bit more, please, about the services that you provide at Gold Money, as well as all of your interesting online commentary, writing, research, any other media.
Yeah, you can find me at goldmoney.com. Gold Money Incorporated is a publicly traded company on the Toronto Venture Exchange in Canada. The symbol is XAU.V.
Outstanding. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chris.
Good to be with you, Chris. It's always fun to share views.
Well, I understand you just moved into a new place. Had to divest the mini Library of Alexandria.
I had a rough calculation, 125 lineal feet of bookshelves, and then stacked up on the floor. So it was very painful to shed all those books, because many of them were old friends. And I discovered there was a number that I hadn't read at all. So anyways, I was getting rid of books, and it's all done and in a lovely place over the ocean here in Vancouver. So,
you know, in this digital world we live in, it's kind of a shame, isn't it? Remember the librarian or the bookstore owner who knew every single copy of every book, any subject? We've lost that.
Yeah, younger folks aren't buying books, but I found that Salvation Army would take any number of books, so that was my objective was to get rid of them. So, and I've kept some of my very good friends. But this week, well, actually on Friday, Monday, the gold community was all excited about the Golden Cross, whereby the 200-day and 50-day moving averages had crossed over in what is considered a constructive fashion. So a number of technical guys got onto it. But, of course, our work, we just updated ours on the Golden Cross, and it is not all that consistent. It's worthwhile watching other things, like, for example, the commitment of traders' numbers are now beginning to get toppy, momentum things and patterns. So we could be within a few weeks of the gold and precious metal sector taking a little rest. Oh, we got long in some gold stocks in November, and then again in January when the collapse of the big stock market put them down to pretty attractive prices. So we didn't have a huge position, but I noticed that some of the indexes, GDXJ, were up like 60%. Some of the stocks did more than that, and they've continued. So we had one of our main indicators. It doesn't happen very often, and we call it the peak momentum forecaster. And this is relates to the credit markets, and it's got a Copic on it and various technical things like that. And when it goes straight up and gets above a certain level, it says that whatever is being speculated in is getting awfully exciting. And when it gets above 1.2, it's really blow-off territory. So anyways, in 2011, this forecaster was going straight up. And when it peaks, usually whatever the speculation is in would peak, you know, some 2 to 3 months later. And like, for example, in 2006, it gave its big signal, reversed, and we looked around to see the most speculative item, and it was housing. So we did a couple of studies on housing, and that was 2006 was the peak in actual house prices. But at any rate, in 2011, we got this on this forecaster model, and called for that it was a cyclical bull market top for the hot metals. That would be precious metals and base metals. Also, the grains were fairly warm as well, so we figured it would be a cyclical bear market for commodities. Now, where we did get a little offside on that one was that in previous, like going back to the 1920s, when this indicator gave a sell and the hot item was commodities, it would usually be followed in the U.S. with a recession. So after a while, we got tired of talking about the recession and just stayed on the bear market for commodities. Now, within the gold sector, we use the silver-gold ratio. And as we all know, that in a rally for precious metals, silver will always outperform gold. But what you want to do is watch the momentum on the silver-gold ratio. And the RSI in 2011, April or May, whenever it was, got up to 92. So we looked back, and the only other time it had been as high as 92 was January 1980. And we emphasized that and said that anything above sort of 78 on the RSI indicates the speculation is getting out of hand. So at 92, we said the speculation was dangerous and that there would be a bear market. Tried to soften things by saying it wouldn't be as bad as what followed 1980. But, you know, Chris, as we all know, you can always get off some of your stocks in a bull market, but you can't get off all of your stocks if you're dealing with some of the smaller cap exploration stocks like I have been. So at any rate, I want to tell you that every bear market you're in now is always the worst in history. So here we are in the last time we used the silver-gold momentum thing for a sell was in May a year ago. And then come November, we advised accumulating on weakness some of the gold stocks. And then again in January, when the hit to the big markets pushed the gold stocks down. And we didn't take a full position, but we were there. And, of course, as you know, there's been some very good rallies out of that, and they'll continue here. But so our view now on the Golden Cross story is that it is not all that reliable. The street's excited about it. The commitment of traders figures are beginning to look cautionary. Same with momentum. So perhaps this good rally in the precious metals sector may get peaky here in the next week or so. But in order to be absolutely clinical about this, we should look at the work we did on the silver-gold ratio in 2011, which gave the sell. And this thing on lengthy bear markets can give the buy, and we're not there yet. So we just don't know how nasty things can get on the next correction in the sector. I'm saying the word correction because I think we're building a cyclical bottom, or building a bottom to what will be a cyclical bull market for the sector. And it'll be done mainly on earnings improvements because, as we've been talking about for years, Chris, when you get the cost of energy going down relative to the price of bullion, your profit margins improve. And so this is all built in now. There is a tremendous improvement in profit margins. We think that the major gold producers who did a bunch of silly things in the decade-long bull market have written all of the silly things off, or virtually all of it, so that the street can then start to focus on the earnings improvement. So then the stocks, really, you're looking at them as an investment with improving earnings when, say, for example, base metal prices have been very poor relative to gold. And the base metal miners having difficulties, this puts a lid on wages for labor. It also puts a lid on the cost of it, like heavy earth movers, the truck tires, and all that sort of stuff. So the sector is turning positive, and we think that one more test of the market could then conclude that the cyclical bottom is in. And it's going to be so refreshing to have a cyclical bull market underneath us in the gold sector.
I think that's putting it mildly. Refreshing would certainly be a subtle reflection of what we're hoping to see here. And, I think you raised some really interesting topics, this silver to gold ratio, because we're always looking at the gold to silver ratio. But if we flip it around, you have pointed out several times that silver nearly always, actually, I think you say always, tends to outperform gold during solid, sustainable bull markets. Of course, we've not seen that. And, we just had James Turk on the show, head of Gold Money, yesterday. He's watching silver very closely because at this near 80 level on the gold to silver ratio, it's such a historically out of, let's say, kilter situation that at some point we have to return closer to the mean, which may make silver a remarkable relative opportunity. So what are some of the signs we should be watching for on the silver to gold ratio? And B, how much of a relative opportunity do you think silver represents here?
We'd be very cautious on silver. Let's flip over and talk about the gold-silver ratio, which we're all more familiar with. Now, in a post-bubble contraction, the gold-silver ratio goes up as gold outperforms silver. And that's consistent. Could you go back to the 1700s? The ratio was about 16. And then on each depression cycle, each post-bubble contraction, like 1840s, it got out to about 35. And then in the depression of the 1930s, it got out to 90. And then even in the bad times, you had the big oil peak in 1980, and the oil patch went crazy. The banks were all playing with the oil people. And it took a decade to wipe that one out. And at the 1889 is when Chase Manhattan and Chemical Bank were broke. The Fed had to help bail them out and change reserve ratios. And the gold-silver ratio got up to 100 on that one. So our target on the next deflation phase, which may have started now, is out around 100 for the gold-silver ratio. So when you get into a post-bubble condition, all of the rules of the previous 20 years go out the window. So you have to look at what worked during previous post-bubble contractions. And one of the things that is you just put a chart up and the gold-silver ratio goes up in every post-bubble contraction. So I can't get excited about silver for a rally. As a matter of fact, one of the things that is going on in the precious metals is the sense of opposite is coming in. So you can have a down day with the big NYSE, and it may be also an up day for gold and for the gold stocks. And that's the way things were back in the 60s, and then it began to go sort of change in the 80s, and it looks like it's coming back because gold is money, and it's counter to speculation and other items. And as I was just going to say, Chris, to wrap it up, we would be wary of silver because in previous post-bubble contraction, like when it suddenly turns bad, silver can drop relative to gold on a day-to-day basis. And there, of course, with those who follow supply-demand analysis, that's too fast to use supply-demand. And and the fundamental analysis cannot predict when silver is going to do the big plunge relative to gold, but it's based upon our old saying about the gold-silver ratio is that it's a metallic credit spread. So in a post-bubble contraction, credit spreads, like the difference between high-grade bonds and low-grade bonds, widen because people appreciate risk. And also the spread between gold and silver widens with the ratio heading up. So I don't want to dash any up feelings here about the sector, but the way we look at silver now is if we, you know, at the opening someday, maybe a few weeks after now, and if you get silver down sharply relative to gold, it's going to be saying, hey, watch out, there's problems in the financial markets. And that goes back 400 years, Chris, on this gold-silver ratio. Now, you can get historically the gold-silver ratio back to Babylonian times, but it's not meaningful because you want to know what's going on in the big economic picture. And things are pretty good back to late 1500s. You've got good economic evidence of what was going on.
I'm sure you'd agree that the geological record indicates roughly a 10-to-1 gold-to-silver proportion within the strata, okay? However, and due to technological breakthroughs as well as sophisticated processing technique, there has been such an exponential parabolic increase in the efficiency of mining, especially in some of the lesser precious metals, that we have a surfeit of silver. And that, of course, weighs heavily on the sector. At some point, though, do you expect the naturally occurring 10-to-1 ratio to reestablish itself?
Every post-bubble contraction, you've seen the gold-silver ratio go to new highs. So you went from a range when it was 17, then in, say, 38, and then 70, then 100. And so our forecast for the gold-silver ratio, some years from now, would be around 100. I think it's 80 now.
That would seem to coincide then with the longer-term view that silver still has to virtually correct all of the bull market advance into maybe the $7 or $8 area.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's people in our business are often selling opinion. And our product is research. And if you look at the gold-silver ratio for 300 years or 400 years, and you look at what's been going on in the economy, which is a long economic recovery leading to an era of inflation and tangible assets, and then once the inflation and tangible assets like commodities in 1920 concluded, then it's set up the inflation of financial assets that concluded in 1929, and that marked the beginning of a severe contraction. So you go from the folks hoarding tangible assets and commodities, get burned out in that. Then they discover financial assets, and they hoard financial assets, and then they hoard cash. And one definition of cash is gold. So this is what we're looking for. And then see, now I think the central bankers are getting themselves all twisted up about negative deposit rates and things like that, which is really proving that their theories that if they provide stimulus, it'll result in increased business activity is not working. But overall, the Mother Nature and Mr. Market and Mr. Margin at times trump the ability of central bankers to keep any bubble going. And of late, the central bankers have not had any success in getting commodities up, getting inflation up. They're no longer having success in keeping junk bond prices up and stock prices up. So there's, I think on the, as this next contraction becomes more visible, the public has a great reservoir of common sense. And it can look at what the central bankers are promising and look at what they're delivering and saying, you guys are out of here. In which case, at some point, there will be a gold standard. That's when the public starts to take over what should be money out of the hands of the experts, and it probably go along with the public taking over the political process from the hands of experts. It's going to be very exciting times.
Oh, I agree. This concept you're raising, I think, would require a real sea change in the modern world. I mean, it would overturn the money changer. You know, this thing is going to implode, but we're going to fight it tooth and nail to the very last minute. And it makes me think, Bob, that instead of waiting for this magical day that never seems to arrive where we're back on a precious metal standard, that in reality, we need to be crystallizing that little modicum of wealth that we've actually been able to put away for retirement or whatnot, because I think that what these elite have planned for us is they're going to spring the trap door. We're going to just be walking along through our everyday lives and the floor just drops out from underneath us. The system reset. There will be world war and conflict and tensions and strife and up to the very end, similar to maybe the French revolutions, as a whole century of conflict, economic-based conflict there and upheaval.
There were two nasty revolutions. One was the French Revolution that began in 1797. And there was popular dissatisfaction in France. Then the other nasty one was the Russian Revolution, 1917, popular dissatisfaction. Now, each of those were during a period of blow-off in commodities when politics gets pretty strange. So, and the revolution and the dissatisfaction fell into the hands of neurotic intellectuals who had grand ideas. And they would all be it would be a much better society once enough people were murdered. Now, the Russians were working on creating the perfect man, the communists. And in order to create the perfect man, the attempt murdered 100 million people. And they still didn't end up with, but they gave up. So now you had another type of revolution, which was the Glorious Revolution of 1688 in England, where the last of the absolute kings was displaying his power, widespread public dissatisfaction, and Charles II then, like his father, threatened to bring over French troops to impose his will. And the revolution was run out of London by merchants, bankers, financiers. And then outside of London, you had tradesmen, mechanics, farmers, landowners, squires, and it was the popular dissatisfaction was not twisted by neurotic intellectuals. As a matter of fact, they got rid of them. So this is what is highly probable here. Is it will go back to the 1980s when in Eastern Europe, the public were looking at the promises of their communist governing classes, and looked at how well they lived and looked at how poorly the ordinary person was living and threw off a police state with Kalashnikovs. Now, here in North America, Obama has been legislatively doing the equivalent of building the Berlin Wall. And in 1989, the highlight of that reform was the tearing down of the Berlin Wall. So those people faced a murderous police state. In Canada, the United States, at this stage, we do not face a murderous police state, although the politicians and bureaucrats are right out of control. The Constitution doesn't matter. So if public will shut down murderous police states in 1989, when the public will in North America changes, you'll see the equivalent of the same thing. So the next few years is going to be very interesting there. But if the state's power exists upon expanding credit and depreciating the currency, and if the next contraction will constrain that ability to float debt or to depreciate the currency. So the state is getting itself into a losing condition, and it'll be like in Eastern Europe in late 1980s when it takes 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for the state to assert its authority. And it takes 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for the public to submit to that authority. But in just before the Berlin Wall came down, both sides realized that it was changing, and the authoritarian side did not send in the tanks, whereas in 1968 in Prague, they sent in the tanks. And the public knew it, and it was an instant, and the bureaucracy lost the will to impose its authority, and the public knew it, and they took advantage of it. So the same thing can happen in North America and in England, whereby the public looks at the promises of the governing classes with the idea that an economy can be managed, compounded by the promotion that they can manage the climate of the planet. I mean, I'm very optimistic about a real political reform. It's going to be very exciting times, and the next leg down in the bear market will signal the next step towards that happy, happy condition. I would watch for the speculation in residential properties. In most financial capitals, it's very high-end stuff now. Vancouver is unbelievable. Average house price in Vancouver up 30% in 1 year. And there's always compelling reasons for why Vancouver's going to all go up in price forever. But those never change. So I'd be wary of a break in the high-end real estate and financial capitals, because it can lead to a major decline in regular house prices. That's one. Credit spreads widening. I would be out of any lower grade yield items. It's been a disaster since June of 2014, and we are comfortable. And also, senior stock indexes are not going to do well. We're early stages in a bear market. But the side that can do well in a post-bubble deflation is the gold sector, and it doesn't need any huge changes in the dollar price of gold. It needs changes in the real price and the profitability of the industry. So you're looking at gold shares as an investment based on improving earnings when the earnings for most other commerce and industry can be going all to hell. So in our sector, we like the gold. We're looking for a correction.
And hopefully this correction brings, as you say, the next big opportunity, a more sustainable gold bull market we'll want to see. that silver to gold ratio to see some upward momentum there. Bob Hoy, institutionaladvisors.com. It's always great to have you on the show. Thanks for sharing your wisdom with us today.
Chris, always good to be with you.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity. Brazil Resources, based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves. Industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Chris, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. Another week, another monumental diversion. Debate ratings are through the roof, while topics discussed are not fit for prime time. The hounds of hell, the size of someone's hands, failed universities, con men, and other unsavory reframing of political discord has been taking place at record pace. Soundbites that will be edited and spliced into endless summertime and fall campaign commercials ad nauseam were generated in mammoth quantities this week. The modern political version of the ancient Roman games are underway, this time in a digital, worldwide coliseum. Still, the real issues are being avoided. Journalists are pretending to be objective and hard-hitting, when in fact the debates have become a modern version of the reality TV show. There exists an emotional undertone of anger in the political rhetoric of candidates that seems to be growing at an alarming rate. You'll recall after the 2008 economic collapse how initially the media and financial world tried to blame those pesky subprime borrowers for the problem. But that blame game progressively lost credibility and steam over time as the crisis spread into what were supposed to be responsible homeowners with traditional 30-year fixed loans and supposedly wealthier people with jumbo loans. Then the class warfare excuse had to be modified to fit the growing demographics of the financial crisis. Just like the original Great Depression did not happen all at once, but occurred in pockets and waves of defaults over many years throughout the 1930s. The slow burn that is continuing in the economy may be reaching another flashpoint. The candidates are getting quite a dose of reality from citizens as they make the rounds throughout the country. It has to be an eye-opening experience. Political candidates often don't know how to deal with that kind of stark reality. The candidates are viciously pointing fingers at each other right now. But when they stop pointing fingers at each other, where are they going to point their fingers next? Perhaps at you? Because the next president will have, in one way, shape, or form, a serious economic crisis to deal with. And so far, that specter, that possibility is not being discussed. But it is, without a doubt, one of the unspoken drivers in the back of most people's minds when they think about the future and the future of the economy. Don't let false controversy, irrelevant issues, and political noise cloud your judgment about what really matters right here, right now. Because what is at stake are the most important issues of the past century that will shape the next century. We have to pull ourselves out of the reality TV mindset and focus on solving, actually solving issues that include debt, derivatives, jobs, education, healthcare, housing, and security, instead of just the rhetoric that normally accompanies these issues. Getting mad doesn't solve problems. Having a plan that can be executed upon does. Just ask any venture capitalist or investment banker about the importance of having a well-defined plan. There's a lot of things that require change. To some extent, the current participants in the political arena are all wounded prey. Don't rule out, and don't be surprised, if, before all is said and done, you see at least one, and possibly two, independent candidates appear. One Republican and one Democrat, who turn out to be the actual torchbearers for the 2016 presidential election. The public could get so disgusted by this summer, it could actually happen. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week. Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.